Go to therapy. Talk therapy. I don't care what kind of therapy you need to go to it. And if you need to be on meds, remind yourself that it's just for now. It is just for now. This too will pass. And you feel that you need that, please give yourself permission.
Well, everybody, welcome back to Success Rewritten. My name is Emily Lomenzo Washkovic, and today I have with me Christine Burns. Christine is the founder and CEO of Lady No Kids, and I actually got connected to Christine through Luminary. I started posting a little bit about my child-free journey, and the founder of Luminary tagged Christine and said, "You two need to connect." So, Christine, I'm really grateful that you wanted to come on and chat with me. Thanks again for being a guest today.
I am grateful for being here and thank you for giving us the platform. I think it's just an amazing thing what you're doing and I can't wait to have this conversation today.
This is my first interview on Success Rewritten where child-free life is going to be a focus. And I'm excited about it because I don't talk about it a lot, but I do feel like the older I get, the more it's kind of a part of my identity. And you're just building something so awesome. I guess to get us started, tell everyone a little bit about what you're building. What is the community like? What's your vision for this business that you're launching?
Yeah, thanks. So Lady No Kids is to solve the problem of there literally being no community in existence for women without children. I'm building something where it's going to be elevated, sophisticated women who are coming together who don't have children, right? By choice, chance, circumstance. And I'm really clear about that. I don't actually care about how you came to this journey, but really just the fact that you are navigating the world without children right now. And I'm starting with in-person events because I believe that the in-person economy is back. I don't believe anybody wants another virtual online community to participate in. And I'm supplementing that with WhatsApp groups locally so that women can find each other. My number one mission is to make sure that these women can find each other, do business together, socialize together, and learn together. And from that, we get motivation, education, and incredible entertainment. And that's what Lady No Kids is.
Well, and what I love about this business and the community you're building is you kind of started to identify when you would find other child-free women that you had a lot in common when it came to business and entrepreneurship and career journey. Can you just talk a little bit about that kind of cornerstone of the community?
Yeah, well, I mean, what I started to figure out was that all of us were figuring it out at the same time, which, by the way, is true for all entrepreneurs, right? Like, I was a 23-year corporate girlie. I've only been an entrepreneur for 3 years. I absolutely love it. I feel like I am made for this. So then I started to just find all these other badass women who were also made for it. Because I find that women without children, when we compare them to our peer group at the moment, we have more discretionary time, money, and freedom and energy, money, hopefully, and energy than other women who are our age and are bringing up children. Why were we not throwing ourselves into creation in a completely different way? And for me, that was about entrepreneurship and birthing, literally birthing this thing into the world, right? And it's been a much longer journey than the 9 months, and it has been painful and joyful and all of those things. But I know that women who are entrepreneurs, who are women without children, are going to find themselves inside this community, and we're going to create things that we've never even thought we could create. And I love that.
I love it. Okay, you gave a little nod there to your corporate career. I mean, you definitely had a long career journey before you decided to take this jump and do independent stuff. Talk to us a little bit about what that looked like. If you can just even take us back to what motivated you back then, like what was your career day like before you became an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I'm from the Bronx originally. My parents are from the Bronx. I come from one of those families that was like, choose one, doctor, lawyer, accountant. I was the first in my family to complete a college degree and a secondary college degree. But that was the expectation, right? It was very much, you are going to do this. And so I knew I didn't want to like mess around with blood. I knew I didn't want to go to law school. That just seemed wild. And so I chose accounting because I was good at math. And I got the job at, you know, one of the big four firms, which was amazing. I'm so thankful for that part of my career. Got my CPA, did a bunch of audit hours, found myself in management consulting. I was deeply confused at why this thing that I had worked so hard for, this thing I had loved and said was going to like make me all this money and I'd be a partner one day and all of these wonderful things that I was told success looked like, I was deeply unhappy and deeply not fulfilled. But I was also like 28, 29. So what did I know? I was told, be lucky you have a job. And that's what I think a lot of people who are in our generation were told, right? Be happy you have a job, be happy you're making good money, find yourself a husband or a partner, and then buy a house and have babies. And I was with somebody at that time, that was his sole plan, was that we were going to get married and have babies. And I, the thought of that was wildly like off-putting, not because I was like, oh my God, I don't want kids. I was just at a point where I was like, I don't know that that is what I want. And I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing with that feeling, right? And so I found myself having extreme panic and anxiety attacks. And I remember the first one I had, I was on the one train and I was coming from my client down in Chelsea Market. I mean, how glamorous is this life? And I, all of a sudden, it just felt like the whole train was like pushing it on me. And I was convinced. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have a heart attack. Like, this is what's happening to me right now. And I cannot believe that at 28 years old, this is how I'm going to die in Times Square on the one train. So I run upstairs and I call the ambulance. I mean, had I been really dying 45 minutes by the time they got through Times Square, thanks a lot. And they tested everything and looked at everything and they were like, you're not dying. You're not dying. You're not having a heart attack. None of those things are happening. You might just be stressed. And I was like, I am not stressed. I am not stressed. This is like stressed. And so I start on a whole journey of realizing that I am deeply unhappy with lots of different aspects of what I think life is supposed to look like. And that becomes a very much longer story and a longer journey. But yeah, the next 10 years, I did my MBA on the weekends, spent the next 10 years in HR, which is where I start to learn that I absolutely love people and leadership and all those wonderful things. And thus launches me at some point into this entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned a lot of things that I resonate with in terms of like being in that corporate role, feeling like that was what you were supposed to do, like almost that you had like where you were supposed to be going and you were on a path that there was a path in front of you, like what to do next was kind of laid out. When you started to feel this disconnect and unhappiness, do you think you could identify at the time that it was your job, or it just kind of felt like this unknown about your life? Like you felt like time was going by and you weren't sure what you wanted to do. Like, what did you kind of identify the cause, if you can remember?
Honestly, had the physical symptoms not happened, I probably would be still there right now. I find it amazing that our bodies, you know, people talk a lot about misalignment and how that deals with your nervous system. I could not believe how much my body went, nope, no, 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 you don't do that. You know, saw it as maybe it could be my job. Maybe it was the relationship I was in with the guy. I have trauma from my childhood. I'm a product of a survivor of sexual abuse. And so maybe it was that. Maybe I was drinking too much. Maybe I didn't like living in New York City. I knew that wasn't true, but, you know, maybe. And I couldn't, it felt like everything was wrong and that I didn't know anything about anything. And I didn't know how to figure it out. And so that, again, is like a journey onto itself of going through all these different ways of trying to figure out really what was happening to my nervous system and my body and literally my mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now you're kind of more aware that there's like something going on that you need to try to fix or roll back. At the same time, were you shifting your career? Did you go seek out another job? Remind me what the next phase looked like. Because there was one more pivot there before entrepreneurship, right?
Oh, yeah. There's like 10 more pivots. So I go from being a CPA to a management consultant, because this is like in the heyday of management consulting, like get on a plane, work 6 days a week, but like you're going to all these cool places, you're racking up points and doing that whole thing. Then I decided that I didn't want to do that anymore. And I turned to the big four again. And I said, what else do you have for me? And they were like, you should do business development. Doesn't sales sound cool? And I said, absolutely. Sales sounds awesome. And so I end up in pharma. I'm doing sales stuff like for the big four. And I love that as well. I was like, this is really cool. Proposals. Now I understand how people buy and all of that. And I was on a global account. So I was going to all these cool global like meetings. And then after I did my MBA, I came out and I went, wow, I'm in more debt than I was already in, school debt. And I still don't know what I want to do. Hey, big four, what do you have for me? And they said, how about HR? And I was like, well, I don't want to hire people. And I definitely don't want to fire people. So got anything that along the lines of that? They were like, how about learning and development? And I said, sure. And I remember turning to my parents and saying, I'm taking a learning and development job. And they said, oh, hells no, you're not. They were like, first of all, my father turned 80 yesterday. He was like, that's not a job. And he's right. Like back in the day, that was not a job. There was no learning and development function for any company, right? You learned on the job and that was that. That's not a job. And also the earning potential of if that is even a job is not what being a partner at one of the big four is. So why are you throwing your stuff away? And I really had to think deeply about that. That was very jarring, the idea that, you know, I was going to take this career, this thing, working for one of the most prestigious places after having gotten an amazing degree twice from a prestigious university, and going, you know what, I'm just going to help people learn. The other thing that was a huge thing to overcome was this job came with a lot of public speaking. And I did not know how to public speak. Not only did I not know how to do it, I like got physically ill when I had to do it. And anybody who struggled with public speaking know you get the poops, your hands are shaking, you are like a nervous wreck. And now I had to go introduce myself in front of 60 new hires every week in the big New York, you know, conference room. No. But I took the job and it literally changed my life. I then proceeded to spend 10 years in HR and all sorts of things. I touched every single piece of HR, from benefits to technology to performance systems to, I mean, engagement, you name it, I touched it. And then I proceeded to leave consulting because I wanted something new. So I went to a startup and then I found myself in gambling, in the gambling industry, which was really cool. And then I got kicked out of the corporate world. I was laid off in 2023 of October.
That's right. I knew that there was a layoff point. When you got laid off, was that a moment where you were like, well, now I'm going to figure out what I can do? Or were you thinking you were going to find another job?
I was having another mental breakdown. I was going, first of all, I was like, you must be calling the wrong person. Like, sorry, wrong Christine. I don't know who you meant to call, but it's not me. I mean, the ego is wild, right? Like just how it protects you, right? And then when it was all done and I like hung up, and then they shut your computer off right away, which I had done to people so many times before being in HR, like cut off the access. But now it was happening to me and I was like, oh shit, like everything I had was on that. I hadn't ever owned my own laptop. I've had a laptop and a phone given to me by every company. And so my phone was shut off, my computer was shut off, I had nothing. I was like, well, what do I do now? Once I got that all kind of set up, I started to realize that I had a really bad relationship with somebody else paying me money for me to feel value in this world. And I think that is an incredibly common thing when you don't have mom as your identity or wife as your identity. So like I navigate this world as not a wife, not a mom. So what am I? Well, I'm a worker. I'm a C-suite executive. I am an employee of. I make X amount of money. I manage X amount of people, right? And that was the only way I had ever been taught to identify, the only way I knew how to identify. So a layoff for somebody like me is like ripping your entire identity from you and then adds to the fact that you have no technology, you have nothing there to like fall back on. I was like, I am lost in this world. So I had no plans, anything except trying to figure out how to get through this absolutely incredibly bad mental health crisis where I was like, what do I do now?
Oh, Christine. And that was a time, I mean, there were a lot of layoffs going on, but it wasn't, I mean, it was still very much like a singular thing that felt very personal. It, like now I feel like we're in this era where there's just like layoffs happening all the time right now.
Yeah.
And not that that makes it any easier for the individual person who's given, you know, X amount of time to a company. But I do feel like when you're laid off and other it isn't happening to other people, it does feel like, is it because of it was me? And I think it's funny that at first you were like, oh, it must not be me. I had like a slight heads up, like a 20-minute heads up that I might be getting fired because someone else reached out to me and they were like, do you know what this meeting is? And then I started kind of looking at my calendar like, oh, shit. And so I sort of, I guess, knew it was coming, but I was in complete shock, like that I wasn't offered a different job at the company.
Yeah.
And then like 2 or 3 days later, I was very glad that that didn't happen because I would have taken like anything that they would have offered me. And then I think in a couple months, I would have been completely miserable, but then I wouldn't have been able to leave. I mean, yeah, it's so hard when it happens to you. But then as time starts to kind of pass and separate from when you were laid off, I feel like it gives you a different kind of perspective. About how long do you think between when you got laid off to when you started feeling like empowered to take control versus just focusing on like my whole life as I know it is over, you know?
Yeah. So my best friend is a pilot for Air Canada and she lives in Barbados. And she said, you're coming to Barbados. She was like, you don't have anything to worry about. They gave you a package, right? Because I was packaged out quite nicely. You don't have anything to worry about. Come to Barbados, come sit on the beach. She knows that's my happy place. And that felt so wrong. Like, no, I got to get my resume together. I got to get stuff out to I got to be on LinkedIn. I got to be doing all this. And she said, well, just come with me. I sat there and I was like, you know, everyone else is doing this for themselves. This was the height of the fractional, the height of the fractional CMO, the fractional CHRO, fractional. I was like, I could be a fractional HR person. I can go do that. And it was interesting that the thing that I needed the most for me to make it seem that I actually could do this, which I don't know if this is for everyone, I needed a name of like a company. And I needed to LLC it and I wanted a logo. So that's what we did for 2 weeks. We sat in Barbados, we drank some rum and cokes, and we talked about what could I name my company. And by the time I had returned from Barbados, I had LLC'd it. I had made a logo out of it, which was hilarious if you saw what this was. And I was like, I'm going to go out there and talk about me and what I do and bought my own Zoom account, bought a Canva account, all the things you don't have, which today is like, you know, like you couldn't live without these things. Like, what do you mean you don't have a Canva account, right?
Totally. But oh my God, I can identify so much with the whole, like everything of mine was on my work stuff. And even like you said, Canva, or like I used Descript, I would log in and my computer system would like try to be getting me into my work one, and I'd either be locked out or I'd get in there and I'm like, I actually don't want this stuff. I want to see like my new account. So I had a couple months where that was just like the
nightmare.
Every single day I'd be irritated by something. I either couldn't get into the right one or like I didn't have my own account, and it would get in a loop sometimes because like your phone number would be associated with another one. Oh my gosh, it's just brutal. But people don't understand that even just to do basic business, like let's say you get one client, you need to have systems set up so that you can bill them, as an example, or like give them ways to pay you, you know?
Invoice me? What are you talking about? I don't know how to invoice anyone.
I know. And the other thing that I was thinking in the very early days is like, I would get, someone would intro me or whatever, and then I'm working on a proposal or like ideas, sending things over, and then you don't hear from them again. And I was having such a hard time remembering that when I was the one in-house at a corporation, it wasn't because I was stalling on them, I didn't like their ideas or whatever. It's just like 2 or 3 weeks goes by in corporate and you're not thinking about it. Meanwhile, I'm over here like thinking I'm about to land a great deal, buy me a couple extra months of expenses, and then now I don't hear from you for 3 weeks. Like, it's just such a different relationship to like job opportunities. Do you remember once you kind of started your own business as an option, like this was an avenue for you?
Sure.
Were you feeling the pressure of like, I got to figure out clients by X date, or you were just kind of putting it out there and like seeing what was going to happen? Did you feel like there was a time frame before you were going to have to like throw in the towel?
Oh yeah. I gave myself a time frame. That's so wild you said that, because I hadn't remembered I did that. It almost makes me emotional because I feel bad for the way I feel bad for that part of Christine, and that she didn't believe that she could do it and that she would give herself a time frame like that. And so I was going into my 40th birthday. It was in January. I was laid off in October of 2023. And I had already booked an African safari that had a first class ticket out of JFK. And that was lavish, but I was making good money. So I was like, whatever. And I don't have children. And I've always wanted to go on a safari, and I'm going with my best friends. So like, of course. And I remember turning to my partner and saying to him, I don't think I can go on this safari. He was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I can't go. I'm not making money. That is so irresponsible of me. He was like, why don't we put a time frame on it and let's make sure that time frame's after your safari. And I was like, okay, fine. I was like, I will give myself 3 months to land the first contract.
I knew you were going to say something ridiculous, because I'm in the throes of like adjusting my own random timeline right now. And we are so unrealistic with ourselves.
So unrealistic. Like, okay, first of all, when you were on the client side, some sales cycles were 18 months. Like, there were times that I would engage a vendor and we did not sign and deliver for 18 months. And that was on the learning and development side. Now I'm trying to sell the same thing back to those clients, and I think I have 3 months to do it in. On top of that, my money trauma from growing up put me in a scarcity mindset. So I white knuckled every dollar. I remember the day I got laid off, I went to the grocery store and I bought ham in a packet, water, and I think bread. And I said, this is all I can afford for the next week, which was wildly ridiculous. I lived that way then for the next 5-6 weeks, where I just could not, every dollar that left my hand, knowing there was nothing else coming back in, was terrifying for me. And that is, you want to know the worst thing you can do to yourself? That will prevent you from making money.
Totally.
That's the ultimate thing that will prevent you from making money. And so I lived like that in perpetual fear that I was not going to make money, a belief I was not going to make money, and that if when I took the first contract, it was for a wildly low amount of money, like nothing in my worth.
Well, and I think that's something so many people do, even like for the first year or 2 years, like they're chasing anyone who's willing to pay them something, whether it's like an inconvenient client, not a good rate, like, and that's something that's really hard, I think, to not do until you're able to like secure a client, because everyone gets their own like imposter syndrome. And I remember in the beginning, I was like, dang, I'm getting so many intros. Like, this is going to be easy. And now I'm about to be hitting, I guess it'll be 7 months in like a couple of weeks. And I technically don't have like a big contract or client that I've worked with. I've been like doing random stuff here and there, but I haven't like done that yet. And it's because we sometimes don't look at the reality of like, I guess for me, I was having so many things coming to me that I wasn't like pitching or going out there saying, here's what I do. And so I feel like that goes hand in hand too. Taking, you know, a lower rate or being willing to like go for less than you're worth goes hand in hand with taking like stuff that is just not right, because you're not telling anyone the right stuff that you want to do. People are like, right. Oh, I could send this to you. It's not what you want.
Clarity on what you offer in this world is is one of those things that if I could just give it to everybody, which is what I do through executive coaching, because like I find that to be one of the biggest problems is like you are jack of all trades, master of none. And the reality is people need to know where to put you. Are you the podcast producer? Are you the script writer? Are you the end-to-end podcasting? No, you're not. Or you shouldn't be, right? Everybody needs, if you're an entrepreneur, needs to have super clear definition of who they are and what their business does, right? And for me, when I created Lady No Kids, I was all over the place, all over the place. I was going to solve financial literacy for women. I was going to run in a virtual community. I was going to do expeditions to like far off places where we go find Lady No Kids. And the reality is like, that's not what the market wanted. The market wanted me to solve the problem for women without children. And so I am the RuPaul for women without children. And I am building the Soho House for women without children. Done. And once people knew that, they knew where to put me. Right. But before that, when I was trying to be in HR, oh, you got performance problems? I can change that. You have a culture problem? I can change that. You need an engagement survey? I can do that. Oh, you need learning and development services? I can do that. You need a fractional CHRO? I can do that. I can do whatever. And I'll do it for a song.
See, so do you remember what started shifting you and getting you more niche down? Like, what was the point when you started realizing I'm doing a wide range of things and it's kind of like dividing my bandwidth, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So I did finally land a consistent client where I ended up getting a 20-hour a week gig, which was not paying me enough. But I said to myself, okay, well, if I got 20 hours, then I can at least know I've got that in the bank, get over my money scarcity issue, and then spend the other 20 creating whatever it is I thought I wanted to create. And 4 months into that contract is when I come up with the idea for Lady No Kids. And I'm like, is this what I'm supposed to do? And so, you know, that onto itself as a creation becomes, because I'm an ex-consultant, I have to validate that the idea actually made sense, you know, create what was the offering going to be, then put the offering out there, then realize that was not the offering anybody was going to buy, then on and on and on and on, right? And I'm still in the middle of that, which is fine. But once I realized and I validated that Lady No Kids was a need in the market and that this was something that people would want and they'd benefit from, and that I would have a chance to amplify other women who are living a life just like mine, I was like, okay, cool, let's roll. And I quit my client at the end of last year. And that's when the rubber hit the road. And I went, okay, we got to figure out what I'm doing here. Because again, that I had no money coming in, right?
Yeah.
I had some executive coaching clients, but no real money on a consistent basis.
Right. Okay. So you start to get the inbound messaging, like this is a need. You also kind of, I think, identified that there was stuff out there that didn't align with what you were looking for.
Correct.
Like things existed, but you knew that wasn't what you wanted to be. Talk to me about, like, did you start to build a collective of people that were giving you like feedback? How were you, once you started leaning in that direction, able to like give yourself that reinforcement and point yourself in the direction of where Lady No Kids is going now?
Yeah. So I, well, first you do the market research, right? So who's your competitors and who's out there? I saw DINK clubs, double income, no kids clubs, and thought to myself, cool, but I'm not really trying to help couples. Like, that's not the vibe. And I saw SYNC, single income, no kid, and that felt all sorts of different ways. A little angry, a little sad, a little stressed. And I was like, okay, totally get that, right? Because I have an opinion that this world is not set up for single women, anything, single moms, single mom moms, single people in general, this world does not support them. Then I saw women without children and I saw child free, which is like, yeah, like I'm so happy. I never wanted kids in the first place. And like, I was like, oh, I was like, okay. It's like, that's a take on it. But also knowing my experience as being somebody who is a survivor, I was like, I don't know that I necessarily chose this. I saw a child less. I was like, wow. Some of these people had hysterectomies from endometriosis. Some of these people never met their person. Some of these people were sick. Some of these people had tried IVF a million times and they had not been successful. And then there was grief and sadness and that kind of thing. I was like, okay, that's definitely a version of the story. My story has grief and sadness inside of it. It's like, okay, but then what do I want it to look like? Like, what am I imagining? What does this look like? And I was like, I want to teach people. Here comes the learning and development side of things. But I want to teach people the things that, like, the boys club always had access to and we don't. And so right away I went to wealth, money, and all of that kind of stuff. And I was like, why do I not know how to use my tax structures better? Why do I not know how to use insurance better? Am I investing in all the right stuff? Where is my money manager? Like, I have one, but what is she doing? Right? And I just felt very much like there was a hole in this area for us. So then I was like, I want elevated, sophisticated education by Lady No Kids for Lady No Kids, right? Because I know there's women out there who have this access to this information. But I also wanted it to be curated for me, because in the days of ChatGPT, I can't claim we don't have access to the information. There's Google. You can Google it. You can ChatGPT. Fine. But I'm telling you, it's not curated for me in a way that I want to consume it. And I don't get put in rooms where I feel comfortable asking those questions, right? Because when I'm in mixed company, especially when there's male, stale, pale men in the room, like, I do not feel comfortable raising my hand and being like, can you talk to me about estate planning and like how I use a trust to avoid taxes? I would never do that. Then I started to be like, all right, I'm also imagining that there's like inspiration inside of here. And I went to, you know, social, and I saw all these amazing quotes of like the Jennifer Anistons and the Gloria Steinems and the Oprahs and all the, you know, people who were living this life. And for whatever reason, it was like, it's okay if a celebrity says it, then we get behind it and go, yeah, but what if I said it? And what if I inspired people? What if I told my story? What if I got other women to tell their stories, right? So then there would be inspiration, not by the people we don't know, but by the people we could know, by the me's and the you's and whatever, right? She can do it. I can do it. If I can see her do it, then maybe I can do it for myself. So then I wanted inspiration. And then I just wanted to have fucking fun. And I was like, you know what? Why not? I love bourbon. I love cigars. I love traveling. I love leather. I love... And I was like, I want to build this sexy, elevated space where I can do business. I can entertain. I can listen to music. I can be a DJ. I can dance. I can eat well. I can do all that. So why am I not just making this happen? Then I went to the women. I said, cool. Anybody else want this? And they were like, I love that. I was like, cool. So I'm going to go do it. And that's what we're in the middle of doing. I'm making it.
It's amazing. Okay. You had shared in the beginning that you're a New Yorker, born and raised, but you also live part-time on a boat now. You talk a little bit about that? I feel like that was kind of a part of these transitions that were happening. That became like a part of the transition, right?
Yeah. And I totally planned on taking this interview from the boat, but it's so windy today that it just ended up being like one wind tunnel. I was like, nobody's going to want to hear this.
Yeah.
So I moved to Toronto in 2018 to be with my partner. I met a man that I wanted to take a chance on. But of course, the independent part of me, I moved here on my own and got my own place down the street from his, which was ridiculous, but stand my ground. And I got here and I struggled to make friends, which I had never had a problem with. You know, I've lived in Brazil, I've had different jobs, and I have picked up people all along the way, some of the greatest friendships of my life, all along the way, right? I'm not one of those people who's like, I only have my high school friend. I've picked up people all along the way. So I really struggled to be like, why am I struggling in Toronto? And then COVID hit and I was in Toronto while it happened and I couldn't cross the border, or I could, but then I wouldn't have been allowed back. And that turns into a whole thing. So anybody who was navigating the borders during that time, I'm here. I see you. I hear you. My family, my friends, all back in the States, but my love here, my house here. And so I decided I would, no matter how much I wanted to be with my partner, no matter how much I loved him, like, I wanted to have fun and be around the people who loved me. And I wasn't having fun. And I didn't feel like I was around people, a support system that I needed, which are my friends, right? I am not a mom. So my friends are my life. My family is my life. And if I didn't have that, what do I have? So I decided I was going to leave. And of course, that's not what my partner wanted. And he said, why don't we go try to find a community? And I said, what are we doing? Look at this. We're in a mess. The world's a mess. Everything's a mess. What am I doing? He said, why don't we learn how to sail? And as a New Yorker, if you're told to go sail, that means I'm JFK. I am rich. I am sailing on a J80. And I am, like, you know, in full nautical gear. I was like, absolutely not. That sounds like the bougiest, most obnoxious thing ever. And he convinced me, because I do love the water. It does give me peace and solace. I'm not afraid of it. I'm a strong swimmer, blah, 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 blah. And I went to go learn how to do it. And it changed my life. It changed how I felt about myself. It changed how I found community. It changed how I traveled the world. This is how we vacation. It changed my perception of how expensive boating is. While it is very expensive, it is not as crazy as anybody would think, right? Yacht club has a very kind of meaning to it. And I realized that that's when this sets off the idea that, like, oh shit, community is not, cannot be ignored. And when you don't have children and everybody else around you is, it's like a slow drip of an IV. Don't even know what's happening. And you turn around and you're like, where did everyone go, and where, what happened to me? Like, who am I, and who's surrounding me, and who's congratulating me, and who's celebrating me, and who's, what's going on here? And so I really started to think about, like, what that meant. And then the question was, okay, if I think community is so important, who do I think it's most important for? And that's what starts Lady No Kids.
Yeah. Well, I love how you really had this desire to find a community because you just needed it from like a human functioning perspective.
Yeah.
And then it allowed you to like, I guess, build community in an area where you didn't have like a connection at first. And now the community you're building is so like intentional on connection, you know? Sailing feels like something where it can be a through line for a lot of relationships, but you could have other parts of your life that are not like similar at all. And in the no kids space, you can be very different from each other, but there is this like bottom foundation of lifestyle that is really relatable between you and other people who don't have kids.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about like when you started building your own community, what were the main things that you were, I guess, like seeking or prioritizing? Like what was success in your mind for this community that you were making?
Number one was vibe. I cannot handle anti-mom, anti-kid, jokey, like obnoxious stuff like that. Like we all got it. Great. Nobody wants the child on the airplane. Not the parents, not the airline people, not me, not the child-free people. None of us want them there. Right. But this is life. And that is okay. That's how we all started here. So it couldn't be anti-mom. It couldn't be anti-kid. And with that, I found that I didn't actually have to say that. All I had to do was talk about my vision. And the right woman came to the table instantaneously, right? And so that was one really important tenet. The second was that it was forward-looking. It was not to care how you got here. I didn't want to necessarily unpack grief. And it's interesting because women inside the community now, they do sometimes are like, oh, as they're joining, they're like, is there like a line for childless or child-free? And I stand my ground, hard no. Hard no. Okay. And then I wanted everybody to give and take from the community. So I plan on one day getting a PhD in community studies because I do find it so interesting about what makes and breaks community, right? What puts community at risk and what makes it thrive. And I am not an expert in it yet, but there was something about the give and the take, the quid pro quo of like, inherently, I feel so deeply about the people around me that I don't just want to take from that, but I want to give back to it as well. And that can look like sponsorships, that can be creating space for us, donating space, that can be money, that can be ideas, that can be all sorts of gives and takes, right? But that the people inside wanted it to be a symbiotic relationship. And I know when this is successful, when it gets big enough, that will be at risk. I know that, right? People will see that I have collected all of the women living without children and go, holy shit, look at that market. What we need that. And I'm going to protect that fiercely, fiercely, right? Because women are already exploited. We got the pink tax. We got all the things, right? Like we don't need any more of that. But if I can bring curated things that people really want and need because they've been asked for by the community, I'm here for that all day, all day. That's what I was imagining.
Well, and I think something that you do really well is you share your story and your journey, but you also open it up in a way that says you want to hear from other people. And I think that's how you get people more involved because there is like sometimes a hesitancy to knowing like what's your place in a new community. But I think you do a really good job of letting people share. And then you're actually listening to what their point of view is so that you can keep it in mind as you're growing the community. How do you find balancing that has been? Like, to me, when you start a community, there's so many rewarding connections, but sometimes it can be like emotionally draining too, whether it's, you know, misunderstanding that happens with people within or outside the community, or just like all the work it takes sometimes to be a container for other people that are sharing with you. What's that looked like for you on the journey?
One of the things that people used to say to me about me as a friend or as a person in life, they'd always say, I don't know what it is about you, but when you talk to me, I feel like you're actually listening. And I always thought everybody was actually listening. So I was like, that's not special. That's what people are doing. But the more I come to find people are not listening. And if they are listening, they're listening with judgment and not like, huh, that's really interesting. What is that like? You know? And that's always been my vibe. So I find that jazzes me up. You can't, there's nothing you can do. I don't care if you're on social and you're every, I try to get to every single inbox message there is, even if it's a heart, even if it's a comment, like I try to get to every single one of them. I think that is normal, but it's also, that's not taxing on me. The in-person events, not taxing on me at all. If I can create a container where you get to exist and you get to have fun and explore and you learn something and you walk away feeling better about yourself, if that one thing happens that you're thinking differently or feeling better about yourself, we have done the job. We have done the job. But the part that I find the most taxing is the misunderstanding piece. I want to be very clear. I don't mind the trolling. I get trolled. Oh, the Midwestern man loves to troll me. I'm too fat to have gotten pregnant. I should spend more time making myself appetizing to men so they would want to have sex with me. Then I would have been pregnant. My chin and my nose are ugly, and that's the problem. I have a fantasy, and I'm disrespecting men because I'm trying to be too independent of a woman. Sure. Come at me, bro. Mostly because I know this is happening to other women. If I can take the brunt of it, I'm here for it all day. Great. And I'm so lucky to be that confident, right? I say lucky, but like I've built this confidence, so I'm not lucky. I did this with intentionality. But what I am lucky to have is a support system to tell me when I even doubt myself for 2 seconds, fuck them. So great. I'm here for that shit all day. But when another woman misunderstands what I am bringing to the table for this misrepresented, unrepresented group of women and sees this as a slight at their choice to be a mom, that it is, that I'm disrespecting their IVF journey, anything like that hurts me. And the reason it hurts me is because I plan to do this all over again. And when I get Lady No Kids Right, I'm going to do it again for women who are going through widowhood. I'm going to do it again for women going through divorces. I'm going to do it again for women whose kids have flown the coop. I'm going to do it over and over and over again for all types of women. I'm just starting where I know. And guess what I know? I'm a lady, no kid. And there's tons of us out there. So that's...
I love that. And I think there's this element of like, the more you see the themes of the points of view that are like against our lifestyle, or the, I guess the commonality between the points of view that take offense to what we're saying just by sharing how our life is, are normally rooted in something about them far less than about us. Like, I think there's this element of some people feel like they were culturally told that was the path they needed to go on. And because they never questioned it or knew there was another option or whatever, people who talk about that and are like consciously making the decision feel like threatening or unfair. And that's not everyone, but like, I do think for some people, the negative response that's coming from a place of like misunderstanding what you're trying to say is often because they're dealing with some internal struggle, you know?
It's a direct reflection of them. Everybody's reaction is, anytime that I have reacted poorly to something somebody's saying because I was triggered by it, is total reflection of my experience and nothing else.
Yeah. And I also think, and I have to be honest, I haven't gone through this until I've gotten older. I think there's this element of like, when someone is going through the very early stages of becoming a parent, like, you know, when they're just needed constantly by their children, people who know for sure they don't ever plan to have children, you know, it's like an annoyance factor, not for everyone, but for some people. And I never realized that some of my friendships would change because of that. Like, I knew my friendships would change because their priorities are different, their availability is different. But this whole like, I'm never going to relate to how hard and horrible it is, and that like changes our dynamic because from their perspective, like I'll never get it. That was something that was kind of hard for me. And not all my friends are like that, but I've definitely lost contact with like really close friends because the fact that I never planned to be in that very challenging place was too hard for them. And who knows, maybe our relationship will come back. And they never articulated that in those words, but I just have met other people through this search for non-child women, that is a theme. Like there's an element of we're never going to go through the hard things that they're going through. And that creates a divide.
Yeah. It's so interesting you're bringing this up right now. So I just did a contribution to an article in Stylist magazine for the UK yesterday. And the article is about losing your friends along this journey specifically. And the woman who is writing it is navigating this for the first time. And she's maybe 2 years younger than me. And I said, you know, I thought I was going to lose friends. And there are definitely people who did not hang around. But when I look back, I'm like, that person was not meant to hang anyway. But the ones that like were my lifelong friends, and I'm thinking of one in particular, decided to have 2 kids. And we were terrible to each other in the beginning. Me too. I used to say to her, well, this is what you wanted. Every time she'd complain about it, I'd say, well, this is what you wanted. And every time that I didn't want to come out and see the kids to the suburbs and schlep my shit on the New Jersey Transit and take my whole day to get out there and then find out that, like, you know, her attention span for me was 2 seconds while she's rocking. And, you know, I'll never forget. She turned to me at one point and said, can you please stop saying to me, this is what you wanted. And I was taken aback and I said, but it is. And she said, it is so hurtful coming from you like that. She was like, I know it's what I wanted. And like, it is still what I want, but it's so fucking hard. And in that moment, I was like, what a bitch. I am such an asshole. Like, how am I supporting my best friend when she made a choice? And like, I'm not being a good friend. And I had to turn around and ask for the same. So I think there's a lot of societal thing where it's a one-sided conversation. It's like, oh, we got to be nice to the moms. But I went to her and I said, listen, I don't feel celebrated ever. And I need you to be there when I want to say I got the promotion. And I want you to come out and throw me a party just like the same way, right? Which was a ridiculous request at the time. But to this day, every 2 years, her and I go away together. And for 4 or 5 days, I get full time with her. And yeah, she ends up celebrating me for that 4 or 5 days. And every night we talk about something else that I'm like super excited for. And she literally wells with joy for me. But she does not have that capacity every day. And our relationship will withstand that because I have talked about what I need and she has talked about what she needs. And we make a point of doing that often.
Yeah.
Once a year. And that is the key to any friendship, any relationship.
Absolutely.
We don't do that. We don't do that as a society.
You're so right.
Yeah.
No, I'm really glad that you told that story because I do feel like a lot of it goes unsaid and then you're like mad, but really you never talked about it and you're each just kind of from your own like point of view or perspective. And I give your friend a lot of credit for saying like, it bothers me when you say that because I feel like I'm the kind of person, I say things sometimes flippantly that might hurt people's feelings too. And some of it is like the way I was raised is like you kind of tease people to show that you love them.
Love them.
And some of my really good friends have said to me like, you know, I don't like it when you tease me or whatever. And I'm so grateful that they share that with me because no one wants to be doing or saying something that bothers their friend. But sometimes if we don't have like any of those stressors or pressors to talk about, you're just kind of living unhappy with the exchanges and the way things are going. So I love that you talked through that. And it's good advice for anyone with a friend to like navigate that by sharing your perspective. Talk to me a little bit about how your mental health management has kind of come into play during this whole thing, because I know you mentioned it was kind of starting to become something you were aware of when you were still in the corporate journey. Would you say that now in entrepreneurship, you kind of have a better baseline understanding of what you need and how to like take care of yourself? Or what's that journey been like?
I see the burnout a lot earlier. I see it coming quick. And it's funny, I was actually listening to something earlier today where somebody said, I think burnout is only a product of you doing something you don't love. And I highly disagree with that. I can love what I'm doing and still get fucking burned out. And that's because I'm not just doing the thing I love. I'm caring for my aging parents. I am taking care of my partner. I am trying to maintain a household and a sailboat. I am trying to go to my acupuncture appointment. I'm still trying to get to the gym 4 times. You know, like, it's busy out here, right? And so I can see burnout coming, and I know how to manage it a lot quicker. I'm very hyper aware of my battery, of when that is starting to run really low. But the biggest thing I think I've learned to do is to ask for help, and not just in the mental health space. So yes, I grew up in a family that did not go to therapy, but go to therapy, talk therapy. I don't care what kind of therapy you need to go to it. And if you need to be on meds, remind yourself that it's just for now. It is just for now. Okay. Like, this too will pass. So if you're like scared of that and you feel that you need that, please give yourself permission if that be your choice. At the same time, I have been hyper independent my whole life due to all sorts of things, but learning to ask other people to take stuff off my plate, and people are so fucking happy to do it. They really are. And it's wild. It's crazy because I've been doing it in a second. If somebody asked me a favor, I'd be like, gotcha, girl. No fucking problem.
And it makes you feel good, right? To be able to help and support them. Yeah, totally.
It's almost a selfish need. I'm like, you asked me for help? I'm to the rescue. Here I come.
Yeah, right? Totally.
Right? And like, especially as women without children, like, we're not navigating the whole parenthood thing. So like, I probably do have 5 minutes to fucking help a sister out. Cool. Like,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So the biggest problem, though, is the same way we're not having the conversation. We're not asking for help. And it can be when I feel something is pushing so hard on me because I am like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Not because it's hard. There's just shit I don't like doing. And if I can turn to somebody and go, can you help me? Oh, I was launching my first app the other day and I have a developer working with me and all this kind of stuff. And it was like simply putting the website together, the landing page. I hate making it. I know, Claude, I got it. I made all the HTML. It wasn't that. It was just some of the legal stuff and things weren't working the way I needed to be. And I just turned to my friend who is so good with this stuff. And I said, I don't want to make this page. And it's stopping me from launching my app in the Apple Store. It's the stupidest thing. I've been sitting on it for 45 minutes. Person was like, girl, it was done in 20 minutes. And I was like, what can I do? And he was like, buy me a drink. And I was like, all right, fine. Thanks. And it was done.
I love that. I love that. And I think asking for help, especially when there's like something on your plate, you got to get over the hump to ask, because it feels so good when it's not only taken off your plate, but done better than you were going to do it. Like, totally. It's the best. Okay. You have been dropping so many nuggets for people. Where can people follow your work? You have a big trip coming up for child-free people if they want to join. Talk to us about all the things. How can people stay connected?
Cool. So I write a newsletter. I don't write a newsletter anymore. I video my newsletter. Every week. So sign up for the newsletter. It's at www.lady-nokins.com. You can go there to sign up for the newsletter. Inside that newsletter, I do about a 4-minute, like, what's going on this week? What did I learn? Talking about green room and who's in it and who you surround yourself with, more of my coaching work. I also, inside of there, drop stories and memes that I found really funny or interesting in the news about being childless, child free, and how that is affecting the world, as well as some like really funny things that are on there. I talk about any of the upcoming events, and I always introduce a lady no kid you should know, and pipe their business. So you'll be on it, right? After this one. And so that's what I do for my newsletter. You can find me at LadyNoKids_ on Instagram, where I'm way more casual. But I love reposting stuff there and doing more of my boat work and some of the things I'm thinking about. And yes, we are going to be doing our first Lady No Kids adventure. So travel is definitely something that the community has been like, can you put this together? There's all types of different travel experiences people have asked for, Virgin cruises, because those don't have children on them and all of that. And I hope that one day somebody does that. I'm not a cruiser. I am a girl who goes on adventures. And so we are going to be doing Mexico City in April of 2027. Tacos and tequila and Frida Kahlo and art and history and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to be all women who are just like me, just like you, navigating the world, elevated, sophisticated, and want to have a fucking good time. So
it's going to be amazing.
Yes, thank you. You can go to my website and sign up for the wait list for that. We're launching that in 3 weeks. So yeah, that's where you can find me. And I will be built. So I'm doing the first house in Toronto, because that's where I am right now with the boat, this summer, which is a dinner series every month, along with some of my coaching, where we do collective intelligence to help each other as women become unstuck. Which I'm really excited for that. And then we'll be doing another house in New York in the fall. And yes, and then once I have proved the concept enough, then we'll start to hire people, we'll start to spin it up, and I will have houses all over the US and Canada. So maybe one day the world. Who knows?
I'm so excited for you. Thanks. I love how much of your own like journey and perspective you really weave into the community and the business. So thank you again for hopping on today and digging deeper. It's always fun for people to get a longer dialogue and hear more about the business than just, you know, the little bits and pieces we share on social media. So thanks again for coming on.
And honestly, the work you are doing by giving people like this a platform is some of the most important work. So thank you.